From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The United States Supreme Court on Monday took the unusual step of allowing Donald Trump's third revised version of a travel ban to take effect while urging appeals courts to rule on its constitutionality. The decision was 7-2, with only Justices Sonia Sotomayor and Ruth Bader Ginsburg dissenting. While the order is not a ruling on the ban's merits, it does mean that citizens from eight nations will face travel restrictions to the United States, at least for now. Six of those eight are Muslim-majority countries. They are Iran, Libya, Syria, Yemen, Somalia, and Chad, and they're joined by North Korea and Venezuela. Each nation has a slightly different set of restrictions placed on it. The Supreme Court order comes only days after President Trump faced global condemnation for retweeting several virulently Islamophobic videos on his Twitter account. My guest is Zahra Bilu. She is a community organizer and a civil rights lawyer and the director of CARE San Francisco. CARE is the Council on American Islamic Relations. Welcome to the program, Zahra.
Thanks so much for having me, Sonali.
So let's first try to make sense of this, because right from the beginning of his tenure, Trump has attempted to put into place what many have widely seen as a Muslim ban. This was the third version, and a couple of federal courts had already put a hold on it. How do you explain the Supreme Court decision? Was this a surprise to you?
It was really disappointing to sort of hear about what the Supreme Court did yesterday. I feel like I'm in a place where nothing really surprises me, but it does disappoint me, anger me, and worry me. This issue is far from done, and I worry that the court has signaled where they may be going with this. And even if they change course in the meantime, they're affecting the lives of thousands, if not millions, of people from Muslim-majority countries.
How does this compare to the decision that the Supreme Court took earlier in the year, an order that they took earlier in the year, where they seemed to, you know, be respecting the Constitution?
So earlier in the year, the Supreme Court agreed to listen to arguments about the Muslim ban. This was back in June. And they said, in the meantime, if you have what they called a bona fide relationship or some sort of relationship with a close family member, employer, or educational institution, we won't apply the ban to you. What they did yesterday was say that they would put in place the whole ban. So that exception that they carved out in June, which was for family members, employees, and, you know, students, really, they did away with that exception right now. And so right now, the ban applies to everyone the Trump administration intended it to apply to.
Did they have to do this? Did this come out of the blue? Or is it just sort of a voluntary decision that they decided, we've rethought this, we've changed our minds?
Right. So the Trump administration had asked the Supreme Court to weigh in on the matter, even though lower courts are still sorting through it. And so there was a request that they weigh in on the matter, but they don't have to do anything. They could have stayed out of it. They could have waited. They could have put the whole ban on hold. But instead, what they did is they gave us the worst case scenario. They let the whole ban move forward for the time being.
Is that a nod to the administration? I mean, the administration is regarding this a victory.
So it's important to be clear that as horrendous as this decision is, it will, you know, stop people from being reunited with their families, from seeking medical treatment, from pursuing higher education, and so on. The Supreme Court did not rule on the merits of the case yesterday. So they said the ban will go into effect right now until some later time when there is a sort of a resolution at the Fourth and Ninth Circuit and we get asked to review it again. But they did not comment at all on the substance of the case. And so we are worried that this may signal the direction that they're going in. And at the same time, we're optimistic because they haven't actually validated the contents of the ban.
And the decision came Monday, by the way, for those of our audience who will be watching this on Wednesday. Zahra, Justice Ginsburg and Sotomayor said that they were dissenting. If you look at the order, it literally says Justice Ginsburg and Justice Sotomayor would deny the application. What does that mean?
So it means that they were in the minority, that 7 out of 9 justices voted to let the Muslim ban proceed as the Trump administration has wants or desires it to proceed. We are, hopeful that there are at least two voices of reason there who want to protect our communities. We are concerned that they were the only two who dissented. And so when they get to review the merits of the case, we will get a better sense of where the justices stand on the various issues that have been raised.
That means that the other two liberal justices, Stephen Breyer and Elena Kagan, sided with the conservative justices on this. I mean, it's quite incredible and hard to believe.
Right, we would have expected even in this worst case scenario, some would have expected a 5-4 split, but 7-2 is definitely worrisome. And that's why we've been talking to people about how we need to fight this in the courts, but also in the communities and in the streets, because we can't put all of our hope in the courts right now.
So what about the lower courts that are looking at this? I understand that there was a, and there's a lot of sort of legalese around this, and it's
Sure.
hard for non-lawyers
I
to
know.
understand everything. But there were two judges from opposite ends of the country geographically, or a federal court in Maryland and a federal a judge in Hawaii, who put a stop to this Muslim ban, one on the basis of refugee rights and the other on the basis of the Muslim ban in general. So where did those stand, those decisions?
Sure. So actually, this week on Wednesday and Friday, December 6th and December 8th, the courts, the Fourth and Ninth Circuit courts. So the district courts that made the decisions were the lower courts. The mid-level courts are now reviewing the decisions this week, and so we're hopeful that they will be consistent with the many other courts and these own courts, by the way, who have previously said that this is not okay, that it cannot move forward. And that's actually what. And you're right, it is really complicated, and even the lawyers are having a hard time explaining what's going on. So the Fourth and Ninth Circuit courts will hear arguments about the Muslim ban this week. The Supreme Court said to them in their order yesterday, hurry it along. So we know you're hearing arguments this week. Please issue your decisions quickly. And then the Supreme Court is, well, we're anticipating that the Trump administration or possibly the plaintiffs will ask the Supreme Court to review whatever the Fourth and Ninth Circuit decide. And so that's why we say that the fight continues. Later on this month, I believe there is also oral argument in the refugee ban case, because an important distinction between Muslim ban one, Muslim ban two, and Muslim ban three is that one and two addressed refugees. Muslim ban three actually did not address refugees at all, and that came separately in a refugee ban about I think a few weeks or so after Muslim ban three. And so there is separate litigation on that matter.
So the refugee issue, as of some months ago, there was essentially a ban on all refugees. Is that still in place?
So there is a limited ban in place, but there are also extreme sort of security and vetting procedures for refugees from certain countries. And so it's not the same as what we saw at the beginning of the year, but it is drastically more difficult, and it was already near impossible to come into the United States as a refugee. In addition to that, keep in mind that the Trump administration has reduced the target numbers for refugees. So under the Obama administration, the number had slowly increased to about 110,000 refugees per year. Under the Trump administration, beginning in fiscal year 2018, the refugee count will be reduced to 55,000 per year, which is the lowest number of target refugees that the US has had in several decades. And so the Trump administration is going after refugees in a variety of ways, right? Through the Muslim ban, then through extreme vetting and the refugee ban, and now by reducing the number of refugees permitted to come into the United States.
So, going back to what the Supreme Court decided on Monday, the eight countries that will be impacted, six of the Muslim majority countries, are Iran, Libya, Syria, Yemen, Somalia, Chad, North Korea, and Venezuela. But I understand that there are essentially, this is not the initial ban that was released in January was a sort of blanket. One size fits all on all the countries in that ban. This one, there's different restrictions on each country, which it sounds terribly complicated. And so what media are reporting is that most citizens from these countries will not be allowed into the United States, but then there's exceptions carved out or extra security. For example, I understand in Iran, students will be able to come on exchanges, but visitors will have a harder time coming in. So is that sounds really complicated.
It is. So that's what I was. If it looks like I was distracted for a second, it's because I was pulling up the country by country list, right? The first and most important thing I think for people to know about this ban versus the other bans is that there's actually no time limit on this ban, Sonali. So
Right, exactly.
the
The very
first two,
first ban
right?
had a time
90
when it would
days.
expire.
The second one had 90 days also. This one is indefinite, which is
Wow.
why it makes the Supreme Court sort of decision even more problematic. But yes, the limitations vary from country to country. So for example, Syria, everyone is banned. North Korea, everyone is banned. Somalia, it varies. Libya, they're going to let in B1 and B2 visas. And so it really, or sorry, B1 and B2 visas have been suspended, but some other visas remain in place. And so it is really complicated. And so we urge people who are connected to any of these countries and are trying to plan their travel or sort of figure out what this means to them to consult with an immigration attorney before they get on a plane.
Venezuela is an interesting case. This is one where there's just going to be extra scrutiny. I mean, it just basically seems to be a list of countries that the United States has some sort of political problem with more than anything else, right? Because Iraq is not on the list, although it was on earlier lists. Saudi Arabia has never been on any lists, even though one could argue that the majority of the men who were responsible for the September 11th attacks were Saudi nationals. So it's really interesting to see that most of this seems so much more political than actually practical.
And in some cases, it's not even that, right? Like, there were reports that Chad ended up on the list because they were running short on supplies for the passport paper needed that they needed to submit to like prove that they had the right security standards in place. So
Right,
some of it
because,
is for sure political when we look at Iran, Syria, Yemen, places that we have either bombed or facilitated the bombing of where people are in danger and actually trying to get out, but are not actually in the, harming Americans. And then you have places like Chad that didn't have the passport paper, and so allegedly
wow,
that's why they ended up on the list. And so
amazing.
it's tricky.
And North Korea, which hardly had any immigration to the United States to begin with, but of course our president is engaged in a well, I won't use a term because it's not radio friendly, but a contest with the North Korean leader, and seems to be this again seems to be something that is there to score political points.
The thing to remember, Sonali, about North Korea is also that they're the country that was used when the National Security Entry Exit Registration System, right, or the Muslim Registry in 2002, was put into place as a means of balancing who comes in and who isn't. And the government, then the Bush administration, saying this isn't a Muslim registry because we have North Korea on it.
How interesting. So they're being used in multiple ways. So
Yeah.
the ACLU, which has been one of the main organizations, along with groups like yours, CARE, are fighting this. Do you expect that eventually all of this legal back and forth thing will mean that in the end, some version of this ban will end up at the Supreme Court for a final ruling?
We thought that that was what was going to happen in October. There was a date scheduled for the Supreme Court. The whole thing was supposed to go into effect, and or the whole thing was supposed to be argued, and then the Supreme Court canceled arguments when the Trump administration introduced the next Muslim ban. So we are hopeful that it will, in its sort of full setting, make it all the way to the Supreme Court. There's the Hawaii cases, and then there's also three cases in the Fourth Circuit, which are the ACLU and NILC case, the Brennan Center and CARE case, and then there's a case being led by Muslim Advocates and the Iranian American Association. And so we're hoping it will, but at the same time, we're urging people that they protest, that they stand with their Muslim neighbors, that they talk to their elected officials, and that they work with the media to cover these things, because we can't, rely entirely on the Supreme Court. That court, though it has made the right decision on this issue in previous instances, or it, didn't go right this week. And this is, again, the same court that 75 years ago sent Japanese Americans to concentration camps, or permitted them to go to concentration camps. And so we're mindful that we can't rely entirely on the court. We need to be challenging this in multiple ways.
Now, lower courts have taken into consideration Trump's own statements in judging what this ban is really intended to be, because our Constitution protects us from religious discrimination,
right,
ethnic discrimination, discrimination based on race, ethnicity, et cetera. And so lower courts cited Trump's own tweets,
right,
and the words that he has been using since even before his presidential tenure to point out that this is in effect an unconstitutional rule that is parading as some sort of practical terrorism related issue. The Supreme Court didn't seem to take that into account, especially given that just recently Trump continues to affirm that he has a special hatred for Muslims.
You know, the thing is, we don't actually know what the Supreme Court took into account, right? Like, all they didn't provide us any insight on this. And the only way to know is either to be them or to be one of their clerks.
Yeah, they gave one-page orders.
Right. I'm hoping that they took this into account or that they have a game plan for later down the line. But as it appears right now, you know, it's difficult to tell community members that the Supreme Court is protecting them, because what the Supreme Court did this week is let the Muslim ban go into place.
And just to reiterate what I meant when I said about Trump's tweets and the latest issue is that he recently retweeted very Islamophobic videos that he then came under fire from the British Prime Minister, Theresa May. I mean, he's basically sparked this global condemnation and outrage for what he did. How important is it? How significant is it that a sitting president posted these Islamophobic videos?
You know, it should come as no surprise, right? We should be horrified, but it should come.
I feel like I can't be horrified anymore. I feel like there's nothing, like, when you feel like he's reached his limit, he surpasses it.
Yeah, right? He's lowered the standard. We're embarrassed as Americans, but also really concerned that someone who would tweet these things, who would be condemned so widely by other elected officials in different places, is our president and is putting forward policies that endanger our lives.
He doesn't seem to care about the political fallout from these as well. So what do you think needs to happen now? You said we need to have more protests. When the first Muslim ban was announced in January, there were mass protests at airports, very inspiring protests that people carried out almost spontaneously. And now we've just had nearly a year of one assault on our Constitution after another. People seem a little weary. It's not clear where we should be focusing our protest on. Do you know of any specific, at least street actions, and even say social media actions that people are undertaking on this issue specifically?
Sure. So there are protests happening this week in Seattle, New York, and in D.C., particularly around the court cases with respect to the Muslim ban. And so folks can find those on Facebook. On social media, we urge people to use the hashtag #NoMuslimBanEver to connect the dots on various conversations. And then, you know, really lastly, the point that we're making to members of our community is that this is happening in a week where the GOP tax scam is moving forward, where DACA recipients are advocating for their safety, and where the president has attacked national monuments celebrating the history of indigenous people. And so we want to make sure that where people are thinking about the Muslim ban, they are also thinking about these other issues, and vice versa. If anyone is working on those issues to connect the dots to the Muslim ban, all of them are related and all of them are part of the Trump administration's white supremacist and classist agenda.
Well, I'm so glad you brought up that issue in our program. We're certainly going to be covering the Bear's Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument designations that Trump is essentially dramatically reducing. And you're right, these are issues that are all connected rather than, I think, being overwhelmed by the piecemeal attacks. If they are seen as part of a pattern, it's a little bit easier to make sense of them, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Give out a website for CARE, Zahra.
Sure. Folks can learn more about CARE, support our work, and seek help with any travel questions that they have by visiting just CAIR.com.
That's CARE.com. CARE stands for the Council on American Islamic Relations. Zahra, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
My guest has been Zahra Belu. She's a community organizer and civil rights lawyer. She's the director of CARE San Francisco. And we've been discussing the Supreme Court order on Monday allowing Trump's third revised Muslim ban to take effect for now. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.